Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be talking about something I think that's pretty important to all of us, and that is the economy. But more specifically, are we doing capitalism the right way? Is there a need for a little bit of an update to how we've been doing things?
There's this growing sense, I think, that things just aren't working the way they should be. And it's fueled by, the recent economic shifts. We're seeing record corporate profits, but at the same time, there's increasing inequality. And it feels like the average person is really struggling to keep up.
And to kind of add to all this, we're going to be looking at some pretty interesting ideas from Tim O'Reilly. We're going to be pulling from a collection of his articles on the next economy and an interview where he really unpacks these ideas. And one of the things that really stood out to me was this just kind of mind-boggling fact about Tesla. At one point, its stock price implied that you'd have to wait 1,400 years for your investment to be repaid through the company profits alone.
Wow.
And that.
Yeah, it makes you scratch your head a little bit. It really points to this disconnect that O'Reilly highlights between what he calls the betting economy and the operating economy. And you can think of it this way. The operating economy is where most of us live, right? It's our local businesses, the services that we use, the jobs that we hold. It's about actually producing and consuming goods and
Okay,
services.
so that's like the real world economy, so to speak.
Yeah.
What about this betting economy? Is that where things start to get a little casino-like?
Exactly. The betting economy is Wall Street, It's venture capital, it's high-flying stocks. And it's less about what a company is currently producing and more about betting on its future potential. It's where fortunes are made, not by making things or providing services, but by essentially gambling on which companies will be the next big winners.
So in the case of Tesla, like those investors, they were basically saying, we don't care about the profits. Now we're betting that this company is going to revolutionize the entire auto and energy industry, and those future profits are going to be astronomical.
Precisely, and sometimes those bets pay off spectacularly, but then we've also seen how they can go very, very wrong, like with companies like WeWork. And the problem is this betting economy can become so detached from that operating economy that it creates this really distorted picture of what is actually valuable.
It's almost like these two separate economies running in parallel, but surely they must interact somehow, right? Like we see the headlines about
Be absolutely.
Elon Musk becoming the world's richest person, even if Tesla wasn't making huge profits at that time.
Yeah, and that's where the real impact is felt, right? When the wealth is created. Primarily through this betting economy. It often doesn't trickle down to the folks in the operating economy. Think about it. A dollar earned at your local bookstore is just that, a dollar. But in the betting economy, that same dollar can multiply exponentially. And it concentrates the wealth in the hands of a select few.
Which is what leads to those headlines about growing inequality, right? And it's not even just about who has the most money, it's about how we value different types of work. Like someone creating real value in the operating economy, like a teacher or a nurse or a small business owner, they may not see their efforts reflected in the same way.
Absolutely. It skews our sense of what's truly valuable. And this is where O'Reilly's argument gets really interesting. He suggests we need to rethink the very metrics that we use to measure economic success.
So, are we keeping score the right way? If we're prioritizing short-term profits and speculative gains over long-term value creation and the well-being of people and the planet, are we setting ourselves up for failure?
Exactly. And that's a question that resonates with a lot of people, especially with the challenges that we've all been facing in recent years. There's this growing sense that the system isn't really delivering for the majority of people.
And it begs the question, is there an appetite for something different? A new kind of capitalism, one that's more focused on creating shared prosperity and a sustainable future. O'Reilly calls this the next economy, but what would that actually look like? And would there even be enough political will to make such a dramatic shift?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And that's exactly what we're going to explore next. O'Reilly offers some intriguing ideas about how we might be able to transition to this next economy. He talks about rethinking the role of technology, redefining success, and even exploring radical concepts like a universal basic income.
Okay, before we get too radical, let's break these ideas down one by one. First up, how can we reimagine the role of technology in creating a more equitable and sustainable economy? Stay tuned.
You know, when we think about technology's role in the economy, we often focus on automation and its potential to displace jobs.
Right.
But O'Reilly argues that we need to shift our perspective. You know, instead of fearing automation, we should see it as an opportunity to free ourselves from drudgery and to focus on more meaningful and creative work.
So instead of picturing robots stealing our jobs, we should imagine them taking over the tasks we don't want to do, leaving us more time and energy for things that actually engage us.
Exactly. O'Reilly believes that this shift towards automation will necessitate a fundamental rethinking of how we value different types of work, you know. We'll need to move away from the traditional emphasis on efficiency and productivity and move towards a greater appreciation for uniquely human skills. Things like critical thinking, creativity, empathy, and problem solving.
It's fascinating to think that the skills we often associate with the humanities, like art and music and philosophy, even caring for others, could actually become increasingly valuable in this tech-driven future.
Right. It's like a complete reversal of the traditional hierarchy of professions where STEM fields have often been seen as the path to success.
It's a real paradigm shift for sure. And it'll require us to really rethink our education systems, our social safety nets, and even our cultural values.
Yeah, if we want to thrive in this next economy, we really need to equip people with the skills and support they need to navigate this rapidly changing landscape.
But here's the question that keeps popping up in my mind. What happens to those who are displaced by automation in the meantime? Like, even if this utopian vision of everyone pursuing their passions comes true, there's going to be a period of transition, right? And not everyone is going to be able to seamlessly de-zero.
Yeah, that's a crucial point.
Yeah.
And that's where O'Reilly's ideas start to get a little controversial. He's a proponent of universal basic income, or UBI, a concept that has gained a lot of attention, especially in Silicon Valley.
That's the idea of giving everyone a regular, no strings attached cash payment, regardless of whether they're working or not, right?
Yeah.
It sounds almost too good to be true. And I know it's been met with a lot of skepticism.
It's definitely a radical idea, and there are legitimate concerns about its feasibility and potential consequences. But O'Reilly frames it as a potential solution to the challenges of automation, and this changing nature of work, he argues that UBI could provide a safety net for those who are displaced by automation, freeing them to pursue education retraining,
right,
or even entrepreneurial ventures.
So instead of feeling a robot takeover, we could embrace automation as a way to free ourselves from the drudgery of low-skill jobs and use UBI to ensure everyone has a basic level of income and security.
Right.
I could see how that would appeal to some people, but it also raises a lot of questions.
Absolutely. How would UBI be funded? What impact would it have on work incentives? Would it lead to inflation or create a culture of dependency? These are really complex questions that require careful consideration. You know, O'Reilly doesn't claim to have all the answers, but he sees UBI as one possible tool in our toolbox for navigating this economic transition.
It's certainly a thought-provoking idea, and I think it highlights the need for more creative solutions as we grapple with the challenges of this 21st century economy. But even if we set aside the debate about UBI, there's still this question of how we shift from this hyper-focus on growth at all costs to a more sustainable and equitable model. O'Reilly talks about moving from the growth imperative to a creative economy. But what does that actually look like in practice?
Well, it involves challenging some pretty deeply ingrained assumptions about the purpose of business and the nature of success. O'Reilly argues that we need to move away from this very narrow definition of success, based solely on financial metrics like GDP growth and shareholder returns.
It's like we've been playing a game with the wrong scorecard. We're so fixated on these numbers that we've lost sight of what really matters: the well-being of people, the health of our planet, and the creation of meaningful work.
That's a great way to put it. And O'Reilly points to the rise of B corporations as a promising sign that this shift in thinking is underway. B Corp are businesses that are legally required to consider the impact of their decisions, not just on shareholders, but also on workers' communities and the environment.
So it's about broadening the definition of success beyond just profits. Instead of asking how much money can we make, we're asking what kind of impact are we having on the world.
Precisely, it's about recognizing that businesses have a responsibility not just to their shareholders, but to all of their stakeholders, and shifting our mindset from a purely extractive model to one that is more regenerative and sustainable.
It sounds like a much more holistic and integrated approach to business and economics. But let's be realistic. How do we get from this winner-take-all mentality that seems to dominate our current system to this more collaborative and purpose-driven approach?
O'Reilly argues that it requires a multi-pronged approach, we need more entrepreneurs and investors who are willing to prioritize purpose over profits. We need consumers who are willing to support businesses that align with their values. And we need policymakers who are willing to create a regulatory environment that encourages sustainable and equitable business practices.
So it's not just about changing the rules of the game. It's about changing the players and the culture of the game itself.
Exactly. It's a systemic shift that requires changes at all levels, from individual choices to government policies. But O'Reilly is optimistic that this shift is already underway. He sees it in the growing popularity of the sharing economy, the rise of conscious consumerism, and the increasing demand for ethical and sustainable products and services.
So it's not just about waiting for some top-down revolution. It's about everyday people making different choices and demanding more from the businesses and institutions they interact with.
Absolutely. And that brings us to another crucial piece of the puzzle, the role of tech leaders in shaping this next economy. O'Reilly argues that they have a unique responsibility and opportunity to lead this transformation.
Okay, before we dive into the tech world, let's pause and recap what we've covered so far. We've been exploring the idea that our current economic system, with its focus on short-term gains and shareholder value, might need a little bit of an overhaul. We've talked about the disconnect between the betting economy and the operating economy, the need to rethink the metrics we use to measure success, and the possibility of a creative economy that prioritizes human flourishing and sustainability. Now, let's bring the tech world into the equation. What role can tech leaders play in shaping this new economic paradigm?
Tech leaders are often seen as these disruptors, you know, the ones who are upending these traditional industries and creating these new ways of doing things. O'Reilly argues that they have this responsibility to use that power and influence to shape a more equitable and sustainable future.
So it's not enough to just build cool gadgets and make billions of dollars. They actually have to think about the impact their creations are having on society and the planet.
Exactly. O'Reilly challenges them to think beyond just building the next unicorn and consider how their innovations can address some of the really pressing challenges we're facing, like climate change inequality and access to education and healthcare.
It's interesting to think about the role of ethics in all this. You know, we've seen how technology can be used for both good and bad, like social media can connect people and spread information, but it can also be used to manipulate and divide. So how do we ensure that technology is used to create a more humane and just world rather than exacerbating existing problems?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's one that O'Reilly doesn't shy away from. He believes that tech leaders need to be much more conscious of the ethical implications of their work and to prioritize social good over those short-term profits.
Like that Spider-Man quote.
Right.
With great power comes great responsibility,
right?
Right. But how do we hold these tech giants accountable? I mean, they often seem to operate in their own little bubble, driven by their own internal logic and metrics.
That's where the role of government and regulation comes in. You know, O'Reilly argues we need smart policies that encourage innovation while also protecting the public interest. We need to make sure that the benefits of technological progress are shared widely and that the costs aren't borne disproportionately by those who are most vulnerable.
So it's not about stifling innovation with burdensome regulations,
but
about creating a level playing field and setting clear guidelines that ensure technology serves humanity rather than the other way around.
Exactly. And this requires a much more collaborative approach between government, industry, and civil society. You know, we need to have these open and honest conversations about the potential impacts of technology and to work together to shape a future that benefits everyone.
So it's not just about leaving it up to the techies to figure it all out. It's about all of us engaging in this conversation and demanding that technology be used to create a more just and equitable world. But let's be honest, these are big, complex issues. And the forces that benefit from the status quo, the powerful corporations, the lobbyists, the entrenched interests, they're not going to just roll over and let this new economic paradigm take hold without a fight.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Change is never easy, especially when it comes to something as fundamental as our economic system. But O'Reilly reminds us that throughout history, progress has often been driven by those who dared to challenge the status quo and to imagine a better world.
So even though the road ahead might be bumpy, we can't give in to cynicism or despair. We have to believe that a more just and sustainable economy is possible and that we all have a role to play in making it happen.
Precisely. And that's where O'Reilly leaves us with a final thought-provoking question. What kind of economy do you want to be a part of? Do you want to continue down this path of rampant consumerism, growing inequality, and environmental degradation? Or are you willing to step up and demand something better? A next economy where purpose trumps profits, where technology serves humanity, and where everyone has the opportunity to thrive.
That's a powerful question to end on. It reminds us that the future isn't preordained. It's something we create through our choices and our actions. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the future of capitalism. We hope it's given you some food for thought and perhaps even inspired you to become an agent of change. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a better world.